The only other thing I want to mention is Fez. Fucking Fez. All right, we're on. Let's do this.
Roll for host.
Random. Rolling. Slide to unlock.
2.
20. Oh, shit.
Oh. Let's see what I get. We might have a roll
off.
You
are not going to get another 20.
You think? You're right. 16.
All right.
Yes, I think.
That would be crazy.
Oh, shit. All right, we've finally gone around the horn. Take it away, Josh.
Oh, my gosh, I'm host. That means I have to talk a lot.
Yeah, don't fuck it up.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast.
Woo!
I'm not going to do any intro at all. Charles, how was this week for you?
This week was good. This week was really good. I didn't play a ton of stuff. I played one new game and a bunch of the games that we've already talked about, so I played a lot more Trials. We don't really need to discuss that, except to say that that game is...
Played a lot of Trials.
Really enjoyable. Really enjoyable.
I did not play any Trials beyond that.
I played a lot of Trials while thinking about Fez, because I've gotten to a point in Fez... where I literally just have to solve a riddle, just like one of those, you know, the answer is an elephant, and it's like, what's long and tall? You know, that kind of a riddle, just like a wordplay riddle. I literally just have to think about that and solve one.
While you zone out.
And so I'm just like doing other shit, but I'm always playing Fez.
Always.
Like, yeah.
So in Trials, do you generally like try to get gold medals before you move on?
Trials is interesting because Trials actually has a lot of depth to the bike selection. There are basically two bikes that you'll end up using. There's the 450, the single cylinder 450 Thumper, and then like the 250, which is the 450 has a higher top speed, and the 250 is more maneuverable. Does more has better acceleration.
Is there also a Bambi model?
There is a little mini. It's called the Mini Donkey. It's a 60cc little tiny.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
Mini Donkey.
That's just the name of the bike.
The Burrito?
Yeah. So you will use those in different... Basically, you end up using the theoretical best bike is not the fastest. It's the one that accelerates most, and you use that in the hard and extreme levels because you need that level of maneuverability. But you'll actually get faster times on the easy levels by using the bike with the faster top speed. So there's some interplay there. I don't try necessarily to get gold... other than, I like to go through and just pass everything, and then go through and, you know, get gold, and then go through and beat everybody else who plays the game so I can be number one on the leaderboard.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I play, too.
Friends.
Yeah, except so, I don't get the golds. I just skip that part.
This game has that was not in Trials HD? Fucking platinum medals.
Horrible music.
Oh, better than gold.
Beyond gold. Once you unlock the last level, you can go back and do platinum medals, which are like...
Wait, you can't get platinums on your first time through?
No. They're not even an option. You don't even know they exist until
What if your score was good enough?
I think that once you unlocked the last level, or once you unlocked the last set, then you would instantly have platinums in all the other
ones. Okay, that's good.
So yeah. It does remember if you do that well.
Yeah, if you have the time, then...
That's good.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. I don't know for sure.
But those are really hard times, right? Those are like, you have to be perfect.
They're ridiculous. They're like, whatever, the top 10% of the leaderboards or something like that. Mm. Like craziness. So I think that some of those are maybe achievable for me if I just sat down and really like went after it. But mostly I just want to gold everything except for the extreme levels. I just want to pass those. Like in Trials HD, I just got through every level. I made it through. But I made it through some of the levels in HD with like 50 retries or 100 retries.
Yeah, so how far into Trials before it starts getting stupid hard like that?
Extreme.
Like, no, my how
The
long?
Extreme levels, which is the last set of levels.
Last
are
set of how
the,
many
like,
sets?
I mean, there's easy, medium, hard, and extreme levels.
Okay.
And groups of levels. So maybe there's like... you know, 10 extreme levels, and maybe there are, I don't know, maybe there are like 50 levels overall or 60. There's also all the user-generated stuff in this version.
I'm curious, would you want to play a game like that that wasn't, 2.5D, that was actually 3D, but was the same kind of, like, model? Or do you think that would take away something?
I mean...
It's hard enough as is.
It's really hard as is. Controlling yet another axis. I mean, I think,
you know, like in real life, you're controlling that access.
You certainly are. And the stuff they do in real life, like, you know, we've mentioned we should YouTube this, and I should show you kind of some of the stuff they're doing, because it's like as crazy and impressive and like seemingly impossible as anything you see in the game. That's not true. The stuff you see in the game is like clearly impossible, ridiculous, like jumping off, you know, 12 story, you know, jumps and stuff like that.
Oh, you can't do that in real
life? You can't do that.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Anyway, that's cool. That game's good. Have you heard about the stuff that's going on in EVE right now? Like, literally right
EVE
now.
EVE Online, more politics?
There is...
I've heard many things going on there.
Like, this weekend, starting on Friday, there's, like, a galaxy... or universe-wide crazy, like, revolt. The Goon Squad or whatever.
Oh, from Something Awful?
I think they started there, but yeah. So it's that like, cohort or clan or whatever they call them... has over the last like 2 years building up a massive fleet of, they have like 15,000 little single man explosive suicide mission ships, and they have used that to blockade every delivery of this one particular mineral. And so they're totally embargoing, like,
wow.
The whole group of people who play the game can't get this one, like, it's like the super scarce resource.
They're like holding the universe hostage.
They're holding the entire game hostage. It's so sweet. Like, that game is so rad for allowing, and, you know, the developers have said, this is exactly what we want people to be doing. This is totally, exactly right.
That's like the best game ever that I don't actually want to play.
Yeah,
all I want to do is hear about this, but I can't even.
It's so much fun to read articles about their corporations and people that have infiltrated onto the board of directors of different companies and then run away,
looted everything
with millions, with literally like hundreds of thousands of dollars of real cash, basically.
Yeah, I think it would be so interesting for somebody to do a documentary about all that stuff. Like well-produced documentary with interviews.
Like a two-player production, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that about all those... Not about, like, the developer in the game, but about all those, like, cool episodes of that kind of stuff. Because that's super sweet.
That's,
I love that.
That's brilliant. So great.
Yeah. None of us want to even touch it.
And yet, I assume it's painful as hell to get started.
Yeah, I've heard it's called, like, Spreadsheet the MMO.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is.
You have to get that into it or
it's
something.
It's actually surprisingly pretty. I don't know if you've seen the graphics, but the graphics are really nice. But it seems basically like just an overlay over a spreadsheet, ultimately. But it is actually good to look at.
We should try it. You want to try it?
Well, I assume they have a trial period, like every MMO. So yeah, I could try it for like, you know, 5 minutes and then realize this is definitely not for me.
Maybe now is not a good time to try it if we are just going to go in and not be able to do anything.
Oh, right. Yeah. We might be slaughtered the moment we, you know,
apparently they're like so there's like high security and low security areas of the universe, and high security is there's essentially like a police force that will come down on you. And so the Goon Squad, who traditionally operate in the low security areas and the kind of more interesting interactions happen over there, are doing this to kind of basically just to make life really difficult for the people who only play in the high sec kind of zones.
It's like a galaxy-wide troll.
It is.
That's what it
is. Yeah.
And Notch's new game almost seems like an EVE competitor. He's making that space limited resources.
0x10c or whatever it is.
I think it's 0x10 to the C.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Is it planned to be like an MMO?
I think it is,
I believe so.
Or like independent little servers like Minecraft.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's too early to tell.
You've got that, you've got like a computer, a 16-bit computer on your ship.
That you can actually program.
Yeah. Speaking of playing games within games.
Although that was created by the creator to make original stuff. I hope someone doesn't take that just to make, you know, Super Mario Brothers level 1. I'll be very disappointed if that's all they do with it.
100% somebody's going to do
that. I know, but
that's why he's making it.
Move on. Do something else. I'm going to bring us up something like that in my part.
Well, I think it makes sense. Like, he clearly recognized that was one of the fun things that people were doing with Minecraft. And he's like, let's make this a mechanic.
It definitely seems like a game that I'm not really excited to play, though. It's another one of those, like, interesting concept. I'm looking forward to it like EVE, like not to actually play myself.
Yeah, I love that we live in a world that we can look forward to games that we will definitely not play.
Yeah. So this week, this little YouTube video came out called Go Right. Mike, you linked this to me.
Oh, God.
It's so cool. Did you see that?
I didn't watch that. What is it?
It's like 2 minutes long with some interesting music, and it's just basically every video game character you can think of walking to the right.
Okay.
It's just like a little, you know, like short film, basically, of, and it's surprisingly engrossing and sort of
really,
yeah, interesting.
It has some nice music, you know, kind of orchestral music that kind of amps up the emotion.
It's like an art piece.
I did see the big graphic of all these different video game characters rendered as Mega Man bosses.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was super dope.
Yeah.
Cool. I got my highest Drop 7 score ever today, this morning, before the podcast.
Wow.
Congratulations.
667,149 points. Oh, thank you very much.
Now, what is that on the global leaderboard?
It's number one for this, for today. Global leaderboard. Well, the thing is, that game got hacked so early on that, like, the number one global leaderboard is like a billion points. Yeah, you have to scroll down.
How
like,
long did it take you to play that match?
That was probably like, I don't know, 30 minutes.
Okay. Because as much as I love Luminous, I bought the Luminous, what is it called? Electronic Symphony.
So we're talking about Drop 7, you know that, right?
Yeah, I'm interrupting. on the Vita, whatever the Luminous Vita is, Electronic Symphony or something. Mm-hmm. And I've only played it literally like three times, because every time I've played it, it ended up being like a 5-hour session or something. It just never ended.
So my high score,
so good.
The time
it's,
that
no, but the problem is the difficulty balance of that new game. They made it so, I'm not that good. I'm not as good as Charles, who could play that long even on the earlier iterations.
Long and hard.
Right? I usually would drop out on the earlier iterations after 40 minutes or something like that.
So the game,
but this new one is easy enough. I can just play for so until I basically get fatigued and I forget how to make really, really easy blocks. And then I just start stacking them up, making dumb mistakes.
The game when I got my high score on Luminous. So I have at the time, I actually haven't checked in a long time, but at the time, like 2 years ago, it was on the top 10 on Xbox Live for that level set. And that game was 4 hours. It took me 4 hours to get that that score. And I literally only stopped. That level, you reach a point where it no longer accelerates. It just doesn't get any faster. And if you can play at that speed, then you can just go forever. And so now there are several people who have 10 million on that point. And mine was like 4 million something. And I was sixth when that happened. And so I've probably been bumped off now, but it's just going to fill up with people who are willing to play it to 10 million and just get up there.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it goes on forever.
But Drop 7 isn't like that.
No, I just wanted to crow about my high score. I was just proud of that.
Crowed.
So I played some Super Monday Night Combat this week. Have you tried that game?
No, I've heard about it. I meant to try it. I know that it's very, very different from the last one.
So I never...
Oh, is this the sequel to that? Or something?
It's a sequel to Monday Night Combat.
It's basically a sequel, but they went in a completely different direction.
It's
you never played the first one?
No, I never played the first one.
Okay, so most of us, I encourage like everybody to play the first one.
I played it a few matches.
And we played it, I played it for quite a bit. It plays more like a traditional shooter, but with a little bit of tower defense elements. You know, one team against the other, destroy the tower's defenses that they build, and then... you know, get to their base and destroy their money ball or whatever. But the problem is it played a little bit too much like a traditional shooter, or what they saw as the problem. So they took the next one, and the concept that I heard was that they slowed the pace down and they wanted to make the turrets and stuff more the primary aspect, the defense of your base, and reduce the importance of you headshotting other dudes, you know, reduce the primacy of snipers.
The shooter itself.
Yeah. Mm. But it still plays like a first-person shooter.
It's
but
third
now,
person. It is third-person.
Yeah, oh, sorry, third-person. But
it's actually a second-person.
But now it's
you
almost
see yourself
exactly,
from everybody else's point of view.
It's almost exactly like Dota, right?
It is Dota. It's Dota in third-person.
Yeah.
That's what I learned while playing it. So it doesn't run great on my laptop, and I have it on like the lowest settings. It's okay. It's playable, but it's not awesome, so that kind of turns me off it. But yeah, basically it's Dota. Like, you have waves of guys who spawn from your towers, and you can increase the number by buying additional spawn points, and you can upgrade things in a number of ways. It's got that same Dota, like, you level up over the course of the match kind of aspect to it. So I can see it being really fun and people liking it. Especially if you like Dota and you like, you know, shooters, it seems like a good mashup of both genres. So
but
it's good.
Are you going to play it more?
I doubt it. I doubt it. Unless you guys wanted to, I would have fun playing it, but at this point, I'd rather do other stuff.
Yeah.
So
I've never thought it was Dota style games were for me.
Yeah.
I mean, they take like 30 to 60
minutes
to play a match.
Yeah.
And you know, in this competitive multiplayer environment, you're dropped in. It's like being dropped into super hard mode.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you're like getting baptized by fire. You have to learn how to.
So compete. It's religious?
Yes.
It's a religious experience?
Yes. It's you know, it's just like getting crucified, basically.
It's about the same thing. It's pretty
about
much
the same thing.
Woo?
So they have like a training mode, which is good. It just matches you up against people who basically have never played before also. So that was nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that was good. I played a couple matches against a bunch of other people who were like in the chat before the match. I was like, I have literally never played this game before. And people said, oh, this is my second time, you know, just kind of having that conversation. So, yeah, it's good. It's probably worth checking out. It's free to play. So you
know, the terrible thing I heard is, how they've monetized it. Like, it's free to play, yes, but it sounds like everything's crazy expensive. Like, they rotate the characters that are unlocked periodically, mm-hmm. maybe weekly, something like that.
Right.
Just like Dota.
So, League of Legends.
Right now, you can only play with five or six classes, and then next week, you can only play with a different five or six classes. So you can't, like, stick on your favorite class unless you purchase it, unlock it. And I think it's, like, $15 per class to permanently unlock.
Wow. It's like that's
so you could end up spending over 100 very, very quickly.
But they'll probably do the League of Legends thing where if you pay 60, like a full price game, you just get everybody.
Oh, okay.
I would presume that's what they're going to do. That's what LOL does.
I did not
LOL.
Know that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's good. The one other thing I want to talk about was Google Drive came out this weekend.
Yeah.
We sort of talked about this. This is Google's Dropbox competitor. And we were talking about the kind of crazy security issues with that and the kind of privacy issues before the podcast. Their terms of service seem like this crazy, incredible overreach for the kind of stuff that they're allowed to do. And I heard a commentary on another podcast, actually on the Vergecast, this week that made a lot of sense. And the person was saying, it was Nilay Patel of The Verge, was saying that Google uses the same TOS terms of service across all of their services, right? There was that big moment where they said, okay, we're just going to unify and simplify everything and put it all into one
thing. So is that quote from the universal one?
That quote is from Google's terms of service, which is just for Google. Every service is that one TOS.
Oh,
so
wow.
they have to have stuff in there that can be relative to like YouTube. And now they're trying to like mash Google Drive's TOS into it. And so
that's why it seems like a crazy overreach.
Because it is a crazy overreach. It's not like it's not. It's just why.
So you're saying it's even worse than we thought, because that means even Gmail and GCalendar and GReader can all be publicly displayed.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, that was the basically the controversy a couple months ago when they unified the terms of service.
Right.
There was a big outroar.
Yeah.
What's the
uproar?
Word?
Uproar. Outcry.
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 Uproar.
There was quite the outcry. And a downcry.
Roar.
Are we fucked? I mean, what? Because that sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, it's like documents that you write and store on there, they have the right to resell.
I think his point was basically that it's dumb for them to be trying to mash it all up, because ultimately they're probably not going to use that. They're not going to use those some features which are applicable to like resell. Like if you go onto Picasa and put up a photo, and they're allowed to show that on the main page of Picasso. Like, here's a photo that people, here's the last six photos that people
even
have uploaded.
Even if it's a private photo.
Right. Well, no, if you shared it and they have privacy settings in Picasa, but that, that wording is in there for like YouTube and Picasa, but it now applies to my Google Drive, right? They should really split it out. Even though it is more complex, then they can pare down and not give rise to these kind of security privacy issues. So I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, because I turned on the Google Drive, and it when you do that, it takes over your Google Docs. Your Google Docs.
It's basically a rebranding of Google Docs.
Yeah,
I mean, just like the rebranding of the store and everything as Google Play.
Right.
The Android Market became Google Play. The music app became Google Play. The music service where you upload a bunch of songs mm-hmm. and stream them through their website or your phone or whatever. All that became
Google
Play.
Music.
Everything
that is
Google
such
Play.
A bad idea. Like, I know that simplicity and branding is important, but like the fact that, for example, like iTunes, because it's Apple's one foothold in Windows, has like 12 different functions that like almost none of which should be part of something called iTunes. Like, it really should not be handling syncing my contacts,
like
syncing
updating
my calendar,
the firmware of your iPhone.
Absolutely not. Like, and on it's I would find it doubly irritating if I were a Mac user, because on Mac they should really just be broken out into separate. Like, I understand them having to do it in Windows, but in
because it's the one Apple product,
it's the one foothold they have in the Windows world. Yeah,
yeah. Like, if they split it up into multiple products on the Windows side, they would lose their.
And it's fucking bloated at this point. Like, it's irritatingly slow, and it takes a long time to launch, and it's just not good software at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't even use it on Windows. I ignore it. But on Mac, you know, it's what you use to sync your stuff, so you're forced to use it. And, you know, I think it's fine on the Mac side. I don't have a problem with it. I do agree that it is bloated, but I'm not sure if splitting that up into six separate apps or something, which has been suggested, is really the best way to do it. Basically, I'm not really sure what they would do that is the most ideal, but I agree that they should do something. And I think most people agree that something needs to change, because it's just going to, like, explode.
I think it is. I mean, I think what it's going to be is just cloud. Like, wireless syncing, everything syncs up to the cloud, backups go to the cloud, you stream your music. Like, I rarely play music right off my... Actually, that's not true. I play podcasts off my phone constantly, and I sync those with iTunes. But
Google and Apple are you know, coming at these different businesses from almost like complete extreme opposites, right? Like, in order for me to use any Apple services on my Windows computer, I would have to install iTunes, which is almost like installing Mac OS in Windows. It then has an auto updater that wants to immediately download like QuickTime and six other things.
Safari, yeah.
But, like, automatically Safari, all this bullshit.
Mobile Me, control panel.
Yeah, it's huge. It's really bloated. And Google, on the other hand, I'm trying to think of like what Google apps I could even install if I wanted to. And there's almost none, because they're all basically just in Chrome.
Right.
They're all in the browser, or whatever browser.
The one I can think of,
Chrome is the iTunes
email updater that you can put in the start or in the taskbar.
Yeah.
You can put the like Gmail checker.
There's a Google Music uploader, which you actually have to. It's a tiny thing that runs in the tray that just uploads your songs. You can't do that directly through
the Picasa browser. Uploader.
Wait, you just can't do that in a browser?
Yeah, when you click the upload button, it makes you download the music uploader.
That seems weird.
It's probably a security thing, just cuz the you can't give the browser those kinds of rights to directly
upload shit from
the browser. But you're choosing that. I think this is an automated in the background.
They chose
kind of thing,
to make it run in the tray, to make it this really, really lightweight app that runs in the tray instead of just a one-time upload this one song thing in your browser. Mm-hmm. Because what it can do, if you keep the checkbox on, is it monitors your music directory so that any music you from then on download or buy or whatever.
It throws it up.
Will automatically get
and
uploaded.
That's why it's got to be an app. If it's going to do that kind of background loading.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anything else this week?
No.
Mike. Josh.
Now's the time when you talk.
Michael Chadwick.
Shatter. Okay. So, a few things. Dishonored.
Oh shit! Dishonored.
Have you guys seen the trailer,
fuck,
like 4.5
so
minute
sweet.
Trailer for Dishonored?
What is that?
It's cool.
So people have been calling it. It's basically like a first person. It's an FPS, like from if you just want to like say a name, but it's not. No, it's not an FPS, but it's played from a first person perspective. But it's really kind of more of a. It's almost like the next Thief.
It's steampunk Thief.
It's steampunk Thief, yeah. Well, yeah. So
it looks dope as hell.
But with a little Assassin's Creed flavor in it, it's one of those games that's kind of like taking stuff that's awesome and kind of putting it together to make something more awesome, hopefully.
Did you guys play Thief?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Thief was sweet as hell.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I remember playing that for 5 minutes and going, fuck this shit.
Did you also say
that? I can totally see you hating that game. That makes a lot of sense.
So as soon as you figured out that you had to shoot out torches with a water arrow, you were like, fuck this?
Oh,
and
my
I was
God,
like,
you
yes!
have to do that? That sounds horrible.
No!
That was way further than I got.
Do you not like sneaking games? I'm the guy that Rambos everything, and I still loved Thief.
Yeah.
Lots of sneaking games are really, really tedious. I don't have a problem with the concept in general.
Was it Warren Spector?
They're often very tedious.
The Deus Ex guy.
I did play Deus Ex in mostly a stealth style, mm-hmm. although you can play that a few different ways.
Right.
And I loved it, but yeah, it was becoming a problem with my pacing through the game. I was going extra slow because I was doing 100% non-lethal kills and 100% never detected throughout a whole
level. This is going to be relevant to our discussion later.
So I only got halfway through the game, and I had already played more hours than other people that had beaten it.
Right.
And, just kind of
too slow. I think the main thing to point out about that is that Deus Ex lets you play multiple ways, and so they kind of have to balance the gameplay to work with all ways, whereas Thief was literally like, you will sneak through this game, motherfucker, or you will die. Yeah. Like, you don't have a choice. You have to sneak.
Did the pacing end up being good?
Well, I mean, yeah, sure, it's not Doom pacing, but if you like that kind of methodical, like, plan your route, like, you have to break into a castle, and you have to steal this thing out of a guy's bedroom, and you can't be seen by anybody, you know, if you want to play the best way. If that sounds awesome, then that's what Thief was, the whole thing.
Super tension, like...
Very tense gameplay.
So Dishonored keeps that kind of tension, but it looks more like Bioshock?
I think Dishonored is... what the article I read that was around the video was this little preview.
Literally was, enveloping yes, the video.
Was saying that they're kind of doing the balance thing. You can approach it multiple ways. You can blast in a Rambo. And typically what that usually ends up looking like is that you you sneak your way in and then have to fight your way out, kind of thing. So you can have that kind of tension release at the end.
Yeah,
so.
It's cool. Not Thief, but it has Thief tendencies. I guess Deus Ex meets Bioshock. Meets Assassin's Creed. Meets
my only question about it stuff. Is that
it looks very interesting.
The trailer is pre-rendered. It's not in-game.
I'm sure it won't look that good
because
but I
it
think
looks
it's...
so rad. Like it looks unbelievable in the trailer, and I'm hoping that I don't even know what it looks like. I don't know if it's going to look like with that kind of a super realistic feel, or if the art is supposed to look like that.
So it's just a cinematic.
It might not
be representative of the game at all.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
Witcher 2. Did you see the Enhanced Edition Witcher 2 cinematic where this assassin gets on this boat and there's like this ice magic?
Oh, God, that was epic. Insane.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. That was like the sweetest cinematic I've seen in years.
And the game doesn't look anything
like
that, does it?
Oh, my God, Witcher 2. I don't want to play Witcher 2. I played the first 30 minutes of Witcher 2. I actually bought it when it was on sale and I played the tutorial. And I basically played it enough to learn that it wasn't for me. I'm sure it's a very, very good game. It looks very polished. It's obvious they do a lot of things well. But they basically force you to play this one class, right? Unlike other epic RPGs.
You play a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're this one dude. You're the
you're
Witcher.
A guy, yeah.
No
you're
fem the Witchers
it's
here.
Not a class. It's a dude.
Well, you are. It's like the Witcher class.
Right, yeah.
Because he is a Witcher. So
I hope you like that class.
They basically require that you collect plants and, like, do poisoning and like, drop traps and...
Sword oils.
Sword oils.
Yeah. What the hell?
You have to oil your sword in, like, with different... tinctures in order to go attack different enemies.
I haven't used a tincture since Final Fantasy VI or something.
There was some magic, and there is some like melee or attack spec, and the magic doesn't work really well either. It, in my opinion, it requires you to go through too many steps to use. Anyway, I gave up on it. Although I'm sure it's a very good game.
Yeah. Anyway, so Dishonored looks interesting. Not sure if it will actually be as interesting as it looks, but so a couple quick things, quick games I found online that were kind of interesting for, you know, 5 minutes, because that's my thing. Super Mario Summary was, I believe it was one of those Ludum Dare entries, you know, the like game jam things. Essentially what somebody did was they took every level, so all 32 levels of the original Super Mario Brothers, 8 worlds, 4 levels in each.
Okay.
And condensed the whole level into a single screen. So it's 32 screens.
32 long sideways images.
Not long, no, just like a 4x3 square image, and that's the level. Like, you can see where you start and where you end and the middle all in one screen.
Is it playable?
Yeah, no, it's playable, and it's kind of fun because it's sort of like a pastiche of that level in a single screen. Huh. Like, if you had to do that... and you can just beat it and get to the flagpole and win, or if you can actually try to get all the coins, which there is some challenge because he puts them in, you know, hard to reach areas. Yeah, you know, I played through a few levels and, you know, I kind of got it, and, you know, it's not something I would, you know, it was more art, I guess, than game, but mm-hmm. it was playable. It was cool.
Is it like Flash in a browser or HTML5?
I'm not sure if it was Flash or a plugin. I don't
remember. It was in a browser.
It was in a browser, yeah. Another browser game, Vim Adventures. So I don't know how many of you out there are, you know, well-versed in Unix and use the command line and use text editors, but Vim is sort of like the old VI or V, which I hate because I will say it that, you know, I'm not that hardcore about my command line text editing prowess. Yeah. And so I kind of skipped VI and went right to Pico or Nano if that was available on a Unix machine or OS X machine.
This is like a game that teaches you how to use Vim.
Yeah, it's a very cutesy overhead. I don't know what game to compare it to, but, you know, very colorful graphics. You actually play a cursor, essentially, that, you know, the whole game is a grid and you move your cursor around, but you don't move it around with the arrow keys like you would think, or even WASDA. You move it around with the Vim keys, which are like HJKL, and it essentially teaches you how to do Vim using a grid-based video game. So you have to navigate through a maze using those. Then you learn about how to skip between words using like the B and the W and the E key, and you have to know how to use them in order to like get across an obstacle, to get a key to open a door. And, you know, you can play for the first 10 minutes, and then you have to, like, give them an email address to play the rest or something like that. It was just kind of like a teaser.
Sounds cute.
But if you wanted to learn Vim, or even probably, you know, V, it was a very, very clever...
Command line bigots cool. are just, like, the hipsters of the tech world. They're just like, man, I only ever...
Bigots?
Yeah, they're I don't know. I just come
zealots.
Across those dudes...
Let's say zealots. That
all
has a
the time.
Less,
who are like, man, less... I hate GUIs. GUIs are bullshit. That stuff sucks.
Right.
I only use the CLI at all times.
See, it's weird.
Shut up, asshole.
See, it's weird. Basically every programmer who like I consider to be a good programmer will say, yes, you should learn V. You should learn Vim or Mac Vim or some variant of that, because they all swear by their performance of typing that even though it's a high learning curve, once you learn it, you're apparently much better than a line... All right, a page-based editor like Nano or Pico or Microsoft Word or Notepad. This is a line-based editor. This is like the old style, but apparently it's better if you learn it. And I've just never taken the time to learn
it. That's the argument.
Because I don't.
Yeah.
It's like I believe it. I believe that they're probably right, but I don't care that they're right because I'm not going
to
do it.
I don't need to participate in that argument.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're right. I think it's just like. If you're cool, you do this shit, and that's how they do it.
You know, there's a heavy dose of hipster, but I don't know. I think enough people have said it, and it's been around longer than the other ones, so I feel like it's had more time to be mastered by more people, so, but fuck
it. And yet it's still not preferable to most people.
Well, because it's harder. That's the thing. It's the harder way. It's the higher learning curve, bigger payoff, versus the lower learning curve, maybe less payoff, but good enough for
most
people.
It's like the Dvorak keyboard, basically.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. You can theoretically type faster.
But most people don't.
But fucking nobody will be able to use your computer.
Right, exactly. All right. So I also am going to start becoming like, you know, the This Week in Music guy, because I already started that. And so I'm going to talk about music for a little bit now. And then I'll be done. So OC Remix. I'm sure you guys know what OC Remix is. There. For those who don't, it's a popular... website and community where people make remixes of video game songs.
Of the OC song over and over and over again. What was that song? What was the OC theme song?
The Imogen Heap Hide and
Seek. California.
Wasn't that the OC? The theme. That was just the best song they've ever used.
Oh, no. The California. That's Phantom Planet. That's a different one.
But that was the theme song, right?
You're right. Yeah, that was the one they played over the title cards.
It's just that over and over again by a million different people.
Yeah, there's like 1,000
OC remix.
I just keep thinking of that SNL sketch where they play that song like a dozen times.
As people
they
get
just
shot.
Keep getting shot.
Okay, so OC Remix, they've got like thousands of remixes by all different kinds of people. I've actually submitted some stuff to them 3 times and been rejected every single time. So you know they're hard asses. Because my shit's good. But they also have 34 official album. So they not only do songs, they actually do collaborations where they do like an entire soundtrack of a game's remix. There's a new one out for Pilot Wings, which is definitely one of my favorite Super Nintendo. And, you know, I might even do a game, a best game ever of that later on. I love that game.
Pilot Wings.
So that is a weird game to be in love with.
Wow. Pilot Wings was one of the, like, launch titles for Super Nintendo when it came out. And, yeah, it's like really simplistic flight simulator, jetpack simulator, hang glider simulator.
That's brilliant. That old, in order to nominate that, I'm going to require that you replay that.
All right.
And make sure it holds up.
Okay.
Not just like, you know, the memories
glow
from being
of childhood.
10 years old and playing that shit. Like, I want you to play it now. And
I'm sure I've played that game again on an emulator in the last 5 years, so I'll stand by that. Anyway, so someone did a whole remix of a lot of songs from that that are pretty sweet. It took me a while to, you know, second or third time through, it really grew on me. They've got some other good stuff. Oh, you know, actually one above Pilot Wings, I might say Super Dodgeball. That might have been a Nintendo game that I played through more than any other game ever, which, much like my love for The Wizard, is not because it's a great game, but it's one of those games that I somehow have mastered so I can play through it in like 15 minutes. It's almost like Charles playing Lumines for 15 minutes.
Right.
I'll just play through Super Dodgeball for 15 minutes and that's wow. enough of a fix for me.
All right.
I'm probably the only one here who plays emulated video games.
What does it have to do with OC Remix?
That there is a remix of that game soundtrack, which is great. They've also did
Super Dodgeball, or
yeah, the Super Dodgeball soundtrack has been completely remixed. Gotcha. I think twice by them. so they also love it. They also do Chrono Trigger, Sonic the Hedgehog, Super Metroid, Final Fantasy VII. They
games better than the two you mentioned before.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the music from it is not worth remixing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pilot Wings is really good. I've been liking that.
I don't know about Pilot Wings, man.
I would.
That might be our first best game ever nominee to go down. To crash down in flames.
I think the best game ever discussion so far has been neutered because we pick stuff that in general we all like, and
that's
there's no.
True.
Real
I don't know about today's.
Oh man.
All right. The only other thing I want to mention is Fez.
Fez.
Fuck it, Flipping. Fez. Watch it. So Fez, yeah. So we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and it was. I already knew it was sweet. I've said a bunch of stuff on it, but I'm still playing. I've gotten both Okay, I want to bring up one thing, and we're going to be quiet for a second, because I think I'm going to splice in something from 2 weeks ago that's very useful to this conversation. I do remember Charles saying something along the lines, paraphrased, of, you know, I don't think this is a game that I'm going to 100%, because I don't love this game as much as you guys. I don't really think I'm going to get into it. Today, I'll have you note on the leaderboard that Charles has the highest percentage completion of all three of us by far. He's like so close to beating the game.
I really got into this game.
He completely flip-flopped. And Josh is like the furthest behind.
I did kind of the opposite. Yeah, I was super stoked. I thought I was going to 100%. And now I'm behind you guys, and I kind of just lost the momentum.
Yeah, you should get it back, because that game is deep and tough. And the final puzzle of the game... It's been out a few weeks. It hasn't been solved yet. Yeah. It's still an unsolved game, which is ridiculous because the internet is insane. They're not insane enough. Yeah. Anyway, all right, that's
me. It feels like Fez should have been completed like 4 hours after the game was released. It always feels like stuff is just done, like it's over. And you know, what's something interesting about Fez is if it's the kind of game that really could only have been an indie game, like... I don't feel this would ever have happened at a studio, even a small studio, like a three-man studio, because the testing, they wouldn't have known how to market it. It could only have been done in XBLA by like one guy, you know what I mean? Or one guy who also has another guy doing the music.
Which is still a really good question, like how he got it through CERT at Microsoft,
right?
With a puzzle like that still hasn't been leaked.
I imagine he would have had to... You know, just say you probably have to give them access or back end access. I'm sure when you give them the source code to your game, they can just go wherever and see whatever. So they probably have some process in place whereby they don't leak that stuff. But it's really cool that can happen, right? And
yeah.
it just couldn't ever happen at EA. Like,
yeah, and the fact that I have a page. Almost front and back of notes that I've taken on this game is ridiculous. I can't remember the last time I took notes on a game The fact that it's deep enough that I have to write stuff down is insane.
Yeah, but you say stuff like that and you're not selling me.
Well,
like, I wasn't sure if I was going to continue on to New Game Plus and do the puzzles until you showed me a couple of them.
Right. I'm not saying that I'm taking notes because that's a selling point. I'm just saying that it means that I care enough to think about this game, which requires taking notes because it's that involved. Like, it's not an easy game. That's good. I think this game could have definitely been a lot easier and a lot shallower and been beaten already and been solved and been fun, but not been sort of the... It's so much more than, like, a typical game that you pick up on a weekend and play for a while and beat or kind of get tired of and then move on. Like, if you commit, it rewards you. That's the thing. If you commit, you don't have to, like Josh, you know. Maybe he'll never go back and get as far as we, but I think you'd still say it's a good game, even if you don't get as far down the rabbit hole as we have.
Yeah, it was a great game.
Yeah.
There are some hilarious... Well, there's one in particular that I actually saw a review of Fez by someone who clearly, like, just got 100% and didn't know that any of the other stuff existed.
Right.
And it's basically like, charming indie platformer fails to impress or something like that. And it's basically him talking about, there was a lot of hype about this game and all the puzzles and the intricacies, and it's really actually pretty easy. You know, there's a cute mechanic, but you grow tired of it quickly.
Oh, and I remember that review, yeah. I can't believe you said that.
Because then all the
was
way...
Was he sarcastic?
No, he was 100% serious. And then, okay. Like, every comment is like, hey, asshole, go actually play the game. Like, do New Game Plus. Like, just somebody just did a description of one of the puzzles and just kind of the, like, four different steps you have to go through to figure it out. And yeah, it's pretty funny. The guy, like, clearly did not play the game, didn't get it at
all. But the game
doesn't
necessarily make it super clear that that's where the game is.
The game does not at all. And that's kind of what I didn't know about it going into it. And I got super hyped on it, actually, by listening to another good video game podcast, The Giant Bombcast, who were...
Not as good as this one, though. I mean...
Definitely not. Who were discussing...
an inferior
fuck
podcast.
You guys! Let's start a flame war.
Podcast war!
Yeah. We're totally going to get mentioned on there and get a billion more listeners. Giant Bombcast are all assholes.
Ocarina of Time blows. Right, fighting game people suck. Call of Duty people suck.
We gotta start keeping a list. We'll put it on the website. So I had heard a discussion with them going, like, just kind of discussing it the way we have, which is like, it's crazy that this game is as deep as it is. And I'm like, what are they talking about? I gotta find out. And so I did a New Game Plus because of that. But yeah, just playing the game, you really wouldn't know necessarily. Like, you get a hint here or there.
Hey, you know what it could have used? I could have used a little dialogue box that told you after you beat it, that tells you where to go from there.
Yep. Could have. That probably would have ruined it, though.
That would have ruined it. That would have made it totally suck.
Would have wrote it off. All right. So, yeah, Fez, done.
Yep.
Go. Host.
Fez is good.
Start hosting this shit. Sleep over there.
I almost felt like I slacked off this week in gaming, because basically
you bastard.
You know, as much as I insulted Call of Duty players before,
you played a shit ton this week.
I've basically just become a Call of Duty player.
Wow!
Except for Mass Effect multiplayer, man. I just kept playing more Mass Effect multiplayer instead of progressing through other project games.
This is directly relatable to our main topic today.
The game is so good. It is so good. It fills, you know, that niche that I've been wanting for a while of this...
Mass Effect-related multiplayer mode?
No.
Bam!
No, it's really surprising that that's where I found it. But no, I like the small team cooperative against NPC half-hour-ish challenges. And I used to find that in dungeon groups in previous MMOs and stuff, which requires
you can say
a huge,
World of Warcraft.
Which requires a huge time commitment, because you have to do all the grind and play. You have to like the MMO enough, first of all, to do all that grind to get to the dungeons. And then often there's only a few of them. I did it in Rift. I did it in WoW. Guild Wars is kind of like that. Stuff like that. But... But now I can get that quick 15 to 35 minute play session group challenge fix. And it's so fun. This week my build was the Slurian Engineer mostly, because it drops a decoy and which is the best tank in the game. So you max the decoy for health and for aggro, so you need his little AoE shock ability. Then you drop it in a choke point, and you keep it up at all times, and all the mobs just go after it while all your damage dealers take them out. So this is how the easiest way to defeat golds. So now I can farm golds by being the tank for the team if nobody else is one. So, yeah, this is the week I started doing golds, finally, which is the hardest difficulty, which...
And leading the board.
And topping the charts on gold sometimes, right?
Nice.
Depends. But I've only beaten a couple different races on a couple different maps so far on gold, because in general, a lot of people are just farming on the same map against the same race that's the easiest.
What's that, like Geth on...
It's Geth on Firebase White, which is the one with the helicopter platform, because you can go down into that lower interior.
Right. Yeah.
And everyone will spawn on the opposite side of the map if you're in there, and they'll all come through two choke points. The other one that I beat was the one with the array control tower. I forget what that one's called, but you know how everyone's usually up in that tower, defending from all the different entrances?
Yeah.
And I've beat Cerberus in the Geth, but Geth on the Firebase White is the easiest. So, man, Solarian Engineer, the Adept Asari, the
Human Vanguard,
the Solarian Infiltrator.
Yeah.
Those are the key end game classes.
Okay.
Vanguard's pretty fun early on, but it's hard to hang in gold.
Yeah,
but it's doable. I mean, if you have three,
you just get out there so far that
you have to play way more conservatively. But it's doable. Anyway, played a lot of that, and played DLC Quest. Do you guys know this game?
Mm-mm. I think I saw that.
You may have seen a screenshot or something on a blog, because it's basically a one-joke game.
Right.
The concept is it's called DLC Quest, and when you first start playing, basically the game is nothing. Nothing exists or works. Like, you can't even walk to the left
until you buy DLC,
and there are no sound effects and shit like that. And then you have to like buy the sound effects DLC.
Nice.
And you have to buy the
not with real money,
the walk
though, right?
Left DLC. Yeah, it's all satire, so it's all in-game currency.
Okay.
But that's the concept.
Yeah.
It's on the Xbox Indie channel. I don't know if it's also available on PC or anything, but that's where I played it. And I played it all the way through. It's actually really funny. There's a lot of jokes later on.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least one Mass Effect reference.
Nice.
There's a lot of... It's pretty good. I recommend it. I mean, it's a basic, really, really simple Metroidvania side-scroller platformer. It's pretty funny. I recommend it. And I also watched Battleground this week.
Yeah, you got me hooked on that. I'm like six episodes in. I love it.
It's, I believe, the first Hulu original drama series.
Hulu and Netflix have both just started doing their own. Netflix did Lillehammer.
Oh, I don't know that
one. Named after the city where they had the Olympics in... they had a Winter Olympics there in like 1980 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's about a mafia guy who, turns state's evidence, and they relocate him as part of witness protection to Lillehammer. Because he thinks it's going to be like this, you know, snow bunny paradise, but it's actually like kind of shitty. And so he basically starts up organized crime in Lillehammer, like
that's awesome.
because he's bored. Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. Did you watch it?
I watched like half of one episode and I got called away and I never went back to it. But it seemed like it was good.
So Battleground is a great first showing for Hulu.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had a number of Hulu quote exclusives in the past that it seems like they purchased from BBC or something like that. I'm not sure who produced all of them, but those tend to be good. But this is the first one they've made from scratch, and it does the fake documentary style. It takes it a bit more seriously than
It's a drama,
than The
right?
Office or but
it's kind of
a
funny
bit of comedy too.
Occasionally,
yeah. But it goes a little bit more serious into the fake documentary situation. Mm-hmm. That's a neat take on that. Because most people, it's
the
a very
single
common
camera,
thing to do the
single camera, right?
Yeah,
like The Office.
Yeah,
it's like that, but
multi-camera sitcom.
But it's more serious about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's very funny. Recommend it. In the middle of the season right now. And I read the second Hunger Games book, which got a little better. And so I started the third. So I guess I'll hold off on that. So let's move on to a main topic. Let's talk about max minning.
Hosted. Or min-maxing.
Or
whichever.
That's right. Interesting. I always say min-max.
Yeah. I think you just said that to be funny.
Max min.
You don't think about it, max min.
I don't know. I think it in either way.
Okay. So define that. What does
max
that mean?
Max min. It feels like trying to write with my left hand or something.
So this is going to be an interesting discussion. We didn't really talk about what we were going to talk about, except the concept. And to me, I'll tell you what min-max it means to me.
Yeah.
To me, it means like the efficiency game. In no matter what game you're playing, it's the concept of taking what you have and maximizing it to the best potential. You know, you can within limits, right? And some games are all about efficiency, like limited resource games and stuff like that. But the way that this is the most fun for me is being at a specific level in a role-playing type game and trying to design a good build at that level. And the concept, though, of just like playing a game as efficiently as possible and making yourself the best you can be at any, you know, get within certain confines, mm-hmm. I find it fun and logical, and I don't understand what you could possibly have against it and why you wouldn't want to.
So I think the term grew out of D&D. I think that's the only, the original context in which I heard the term was like min-maxing a D&D character, and the idea being essentially, you know, you have a pool of points that you can allocate to, you know, or in D&D you'd have, I forget, like second edition, I think you rolled like 3d6 to get your initial structure of points for each one. And you do that six times, you get your six stats and you have to distribute the one, and you would orient them to, you know, give, like you say, you know, the best stat to the stat that you wanted to be, or the best number to the stat that you wanted to be highest, right? And go for the maximum on one. And I think what it has come to mean is, you know, taking that further, it's like deliberately minimizing the your capabilities in one area to maximize them in another. Right? Is that basically how you understand
it? It's usually, I mean, how it goes. You have to sacrifice something.
Right. Yeah.
To emphasize your strengths.
So I think that... So when you say it, min-maxing to me seems a lot like alcoholism, right? Where it's not a problem...
obviously.
Where it's not a problem until it is, right? Like... Or
like murdering.
Not alcoholism. Yeah, it's like murder. It's totally fine until you get caught. Not alcoholism. Alcohol use, right? Alcohol use is totally fine until you're an alcoholic. Like, when you have a problem, then you have a problem. And I know, Josh, you have said...
So it's a problem with taking anything to the extreme, is what you're saying.
Like, it has ruined games for you. Games which you otherwise found enjoyable. And then, like, you just can't help yourself but min-max. And then that harms your enjoyment.
I don't usually attribute that to min-maxing. If you want to come up with examples and tell me
min-maxing.
Yeah, you talked about in Skyrim how you...
Right.
You,
that wasn't a problem of min-maxing. That was a problem of like there being too many paths, right? I like having a more limited choice of direction of path, and so I can go down every path. And when there's like an infinite number of dungeons and an infinite number of paths to go, directions to go, then, you know, I lose interest. I go down a handful, but I'm always irritated at the one that I didn't get to go down. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to choose to go this direction and not this direction. So what did I miss? So I do that thing where I turn around and I go back to the other hallway. Yeah. And then I go, wait a second. This one looks like the one that continues. The other one was probably the dead end. So I turn around again and I go back down that other one until I get all the way out of the dungeon. And I go, damn it, there was one path that I didn't get to the dead end of. You know, like that's my primary problem with Skyrim, or the problem of inventory, where there's all this sweet loot you want to pick up, but then you can't pick it up at some point. You have limited storage space or burden. Wait, so you want it, you're like, these are really expensive, awesome ebony weapons, and you have to start intentionally leaving them on the ground because you can't carry them, or you have to jump back to the merchant constantly to sell them and then come back to pick them back up. So are you saying that, like, my problem with not being able to leave a nice ebony axe on the ground is a problem of min-maxing?
No, it's not, like, in terms of, like, the strict definition of min-maxing, I wouldn't say. But I think it's sort of in the same category in my head of, like, not, you know, letting some mechanic of the game get in the way of your enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead.
That's a much broader argument.
It is.
I want to jump in here because, yeah, I think we brought up a good point that, you know, I don't know what the term is for when you expand the definition of a term to include more stuff than it, you know, originally really meant.
Let's keep this a little more focused.
We're kind of, okay, so min-maxing perhaps, you know, when I think of min-maxing and I think of Josh, because that's usually who I think of, which is funny, or not, you know, you've already brought it up before. I mean, and Charles, you mentioned it officially, like, you are our Mass Effect 3 build guy. Like, we never bring up new builds that we found, even though, I mean, maybe we don't play as much as you, but we play. But it doesn't even, like...
I don't think we play anywhere near as much as
it doesn't even occur to me. Well, okay, it's not that it never occurs to me, but it only briefly ever occurs to me to think about playing Mass Effect 3 multiplayer in a let's find the best possible way to play this game, which, well, I think of as a min-maxing, which is like I'm maximizing my play, which to you means like doing the best, like winning the most matches, being at the top of the leaderboard the most times. Like, that is the goal of the game, of when you play, is to get to that spot, is to do whatever it takes to get up there, you know, to that spot in the game, and to do that consistently. And whatever gets you there, that's what you're going to obsess about. Whereas I play it, I, like, choose my character. Okay, which character, like, should I level? Like, or have I not played in a while? Let's play that one for a while. And I play it, and, you know, I'm not as good as you. So that is a negative aspect of me not min-maxing, quote-unquote, and just playing. Like, I play the game, and I don't really think about my build, and I don't think about what weapon I haven't unlocked yet. I play with what I have, and I talk to you guys, and sometimes I win, sometimes I lose, and it's fun. I get fun out of it, and then I stop playing, and I play something else. Like we go into that game thinking very differently about what we're there to do.
So if we use Mass Effect multiplayer as the example...
I'll use other examples, but
okay,
that's
we'll
the first
start,
one we'll
start
with.
We'll start with that one.
Okay.
When you first start playing it, you know, you're playing it casually and you're playing it for fun. And that's what I did at first. And, you know, if you like it enough that you want to keep playing it, the reason that you might keep playing it is to do better, to improve.
Right. That right? is an option.
Because yes. there is challenge, and the basic goal of the game is to complete the challenge, right?
Well,
and
you assume
to advance, to unlock more options, see more classes,
right?
To unlock more
that's
guns,
an assumption,
to get more gun options.
That's an assumption.
It's not really an assumption. It's like the built-in mechanics of the game. Like what would you say the goal is in multiplayer?
Well, no, I'm not
to socialize.
I'm not saying that my goal is the goal. I'm just saying the goal that I do is not the goal that you do, and you're assuming.
Yeah, my question is
that I'm
what,
playing it
what
wrong.
What is your theoretical
or
goal in Mass Effect?
Is to play it and have fun.
You actually, Josh, so it's actually really only the gamification research says that there's really only like 20% of players who play to win. Like, way more games get played simply for the social aspects than get played to win, like by achievers and killers. There's like these four, there's like a management 2x2. It's like achievers, killers, explorers, and
socializers.
I don't recall the fourth one.
So I understand that completely. I mean, he says, you know, his goal is fun.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say, you know, that's dumb or that's the wrong goal, because that's not what I think. My point is that whenever you probably typically start playing a game, your initial goal is fun. But if it's fun enough that you want to continue and you become like you level up into being a hardcore player of that game, right? The one reason that might keep you there for an extended period of time, at least for me, like that's what I do with some games basically. Maybe I'm just talking about my own behavior. And my own behavior is that some games I play for fun and then I'm done and I drop it. Like, so far in Fez, that's what I've done. Mm-hmm. I played through Fez, I beat it, I got to New Game Plus, and then I stopped. I didn't think that the challenge that was left there was appealing enough to me as of yet to, like, really want to meet that challenge. You know, I was like, that was fun. I don't need to max min Fez, or I don't need to be level up into a hardcore gamer of Fez, or however you want to phrase that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Mass Effect multiplayer, I found that so fun, I just kept wanting to do better. And right. So I leveled up into being a hardcore player of that, and then started, you know, the primary goal is to succeed and to do better.
So I think that what I would argue about min-maxing is that, like, going back to the D&D example, the skill that you would always, or the attribute that you would always neglect is charisma, right? Everybody's like, fuck charisma. I got a 7, that is charisma. I'm going to be the ugliest motherfucker in the...
See, that's where I wouldn't say that everybody neglected that one.
I think many people who have the tendency to max min would, like, neglect...
Okay. All right, I see.
Neglect charisma and put it into fucking dexterity and strength that they can go bash some orcs because, like, that's what they're into. And I think the
issue... So you're saying this is a pretty good analogy for me playing Mass Effect or for becoming hardcore in Call of Duty or something like that? Those players tend to then be dicks?
No, I'm saying that...
Ugly dicks.
Because their goal is no longer socializing or having fun.
Their goal is
just to win. And
they are... When your goal is just to win, right? The idea, the issue, the problem with max minning, min-maxing, whatever, max-maxing.
I got you saying it wrong.
Max-maxing.
Mini-maxi-padding.
Is to... The problem is that if you... are neglecting one, like, whole aspects of the game. Like, there are whole skills in Mass Effect that you never choose because it won't let you be maximally efficient with
at times
your build, right? You completely, you know, cut out an entire skill. You don't even choose it. Or you, like, actually respec a character so you can get that one point back that it started with in that skill because you want it somewhere else, right? So that's where it could turn into a problem. Like, I think it's there's also fun to be had, as you well know, in finding the best, like, most super efficient build to go do one thing. But if that leads you to completely, like, in the D&D example, like, you essentially never role play because all you wanted were high-level stats in the fighting stats, that you're neglecting a whole part of the game by doing that. I think that's where it can kind of get you into trouble.
So some other examples, like, from the past that I remember, Tomb Raider. I remember specifically when Josh would play Tomb Raider, or maybe even games like that, that he could not, like, leave a room, you know, through a door or, you know, to the next area without, like, checking every corner and spot in the room just in case there was something there. Now, mm-hmm. I don't think I'm necessarily saying...
That's a reach, like Skyrim again. That's no longer min-maxing
discussion. Right, well, but... Once again, I'm expanding what I mean by min-maxing. We haven't come up with a term for this other behavior. Whatever,
that's like an OCD thing.
Whatever the,
that's
okay.
Like a completionism.
Well, but I feel like when you say maximize, you are maximizing your playthrough of game X, meaning that you want to make sure that there is no path or object or room or experience or content that the game has to offer. With, you know, you don't want to skip anything that you like, just like going down like
this
in a dungeon.
This is an intervention, Josh.
Like
all of your friends are here.
Yeah,
we want to talk to you about
what the
your
real
character
topic
was.
The real topic.
This wasn't
was
min-maxing
never
min-maxing at
all. All right, wait. Well, hold on. I have to go lock the door now.
What's wrong with Josh's baby?
No. Let me backpedal. This. I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm just pointing out this observation that you play games differently than me. All right. I'm not speaking for Charles. But I'm probably speaking for Charles.
No, I do that too. I do a little of that too.
I don't do actually. That in every game though.
No, and depends on the game. And I don't think you do it in every. I think you do it in the games that you like, and that's fine. The games that you don't give a shit about, you
just
stop 5 seconds.
Like, it's
over.
The games that I like where it's actually feasible. You know, where I know it isn't going to, like, waste a huge amount of my time or be really painful. Right.
To you, maybe, but the people watching you scour every, like, landmark, yes, not as enjoyable.
Tomb Raider is a game where you can get 1,000 achievement points very realistically. How many games do I have 1,000 achievement points for? Like, 2, ever, right? It, you know, you look at somebody like what is it, Jeff Gerstmann, who famously has dozens of games with 1,000 achievement points.
Like the easy kid Jeff games Gerstmann, or something?
Jeff Gerstmann, who sucks, who has a giant bomb, which also sucks.
Right?
Jay Gertie.
You know, I only did that in Tomb Raider because it's possible and easy. You know, you can find every little idol in the corners, and without referring to a game fact, really, it's very doable. Right. So it's just like the level of challenge. In that case, you know, you can look at every corner, find everything. In Demon's Souls or Dark Souls, I attempted to look at every corner, find everything, and I felt like I basically explored everything and found everything without going to extreme lengths of joining all these different covenants to get every spell and stuff like that. But later I found out from somebody who played it more than me that there was a secret area I totally missed. Like I missed an invisible wall or something, which led to a whole lake and forest and everything. I was really disappointed I missed that. But in games where it's feasible, you know, maybe I will attempt 100% completion, but I don't have it as much of an OCD problem as some folks. And I wouldn't call that min-maxing at all. I think you're getting way off topic. And I'd like to bring it back to min-maxing. And I'd like you to come up with another example of min-maxing specifically, not this other theoretical discussion that you apparently wanted to have.
Well, what do you think about what I said where, like, if you're missing aspects of the game because you're min-maxing, like, that's hampering your enjoyment.
Well,
with
the examples we've talked
about
so far, the way I see it is that in a team-based game like Mass Effect multiplayer or MMOs in raiding or whatever, you're basically, it's role-based. So each different team member is focusing on something, and you usually have the best success as a team by each individual excelling at their particular role to their maximum capacity, right? And so if your role is a damage dealer in WoW, you want the highest DPS, and that's about it. And then you need to not drag everyone down by making mistakes, but basically you just want high DPS or whatever, right? It gets more complicated, if you're an interrupter or if you are... In Mass Effect, you know, as the engineer, you're kind of like the tank. You throw out a decoy and you try to get the aggro from as many enemies as possible and absorb the damage instead of your teammates absorbing the damage. If you're the infiltrator, you know, your role is to go hack a bunch of terminals while everybody else is killing dudes, because you can do it safely while cloaked, or to go res dudes while cloaked because you're the best one to go behind enemy lines to res a random teammate. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And so if you aren't excelling at your role, then the team isn't doing its best.
Mm-hmm.
So I will switch between roles. I'll switch between classes, you know, so I don't feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah. Because the thing about this is these are all multiplayer instances, right? You're talking about multiplayer games. Like,
so what's an example of me min-maxing in a single player or a single
player? I don't know if you do it, right? I don't know if you do that behavior in a single player game, but I think that in multiplayer, it's obvious, like, if you're playing a role and for the whole team to be successful, you got to play that role to the best efficiency, then min-maxing is the only logical choice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's logical. Why would you not do it?
In a multiplayer setting, right? But I think there are people who do it in single-player games. People min-max
like
Final Fantasy, for example, right?
How?
I don't know.
See, and I think, once again, you're going to the same...
I'm saying people just do the stat min-max in regular single-player RPGs.
So they just grind until they get level 99? Is that what you mean?
Like,
even if you don't need to?
Like, stats distribution, right? Like, okay. I only want to be good at this one thing because that's what I want to play the game.
Okay, let's talk about Skyrim then as far as your build is concerned. In Skyrim, if you wanted to be a melee, you would probably emphasize your one or two-handed weapon abilities and maybe shield and, heavy armor and stuff like that, which is logical. And then you're basically a tank or a knight or something, right? And if you wanted to go heavy magic, you know, you could do that. And if you wanted to go weird hybrid, like a little bit into everything, some games punish you for doing that a little bit by making it very difficult to succeed. So it's not always doable.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to experience everything in a game like Skyrim, you obviously have to play it many times You know, you can't experience every skill at a high level without either cheating or playing it through a bunch of times.
Yeah, you know, I think another single player game where you would min-max would be like Diablo, or like that that multiplayer co-op game we played where you drive the car around, that XBLA game that we played a couple times. You drive around and shoot things. I forget what it was called, but it had a skill tree. Basically,
the
any
Doritos game.
No, it was a good one.
Oh, anyway, I know what game you're talking
about. It's like any
that
game,
4-player.
Yeah, any game with a skill tree, you could potentially become a max minner. And I think I just realized, like, what I don't like about max minning
is you don't get to try everything.
No,
be a jack of all trades.
I find builds and thinking about builds and obsessing about maximizing my character to the best of the game's ability to let me as pretty tedious. I think that's what we're skirting around is that you, Josh, I think really enjoy the almost mental masturbation of builds. And I, as soon as you start talking about builds, my eyes kind of glaze over.
Roll
because I'm not playing the game to think about how to build the best Sentinel or the best Adept or even like the best, you know, fighter or cleric in Diablo or the best whatever in Final Fantasy. Like, I don't know. I don't enjoy like grinding my thoughts on stats.
Right. All right. Well, that makes sense.
So I think that's really what I see in min-maxing and what I think of, and that is tedious to me. So
the way that Charles has been mulling over this Fez puzzle that he's stuck on for the last couple days or whatever, and during his day-to-day life, he feels like he's playing Fez by, you know, thinking about this puzzle while he's doing laundry or something. You know, that's how I treat thinking about builds in some games when I'm really into them. You know, whether it's an MMO where you're thinking about the most ideal equipment to use for your character, or you're thinking about the armor or weapon that you want to get that you know, you don't have yet because it will be better for you, or just like the deck of cards, like in Magic, like thinking of a strategy for using this limited set of resources, you know. I imagine how that's fun for people to think about, although I haven't done that very much. But that's similar to maybe the 8 abilities in Guild Wars, thinking of your build in Guild Wars, which 8 abilities to slot, because it leads to dramatically different playstyles. It's almost like inventing different character classes in a game like Guild Wars, because when you slot certain abilities, it changes your playstyle so dramatically that it is like a completely different character. So I like thinking of those and thinking of something that's going to be really, powerful basically during my day-to-day life.
You're kind of choosing examples that are where you are going to face off usually against somebody else, but I guess it could be an NPC as well, like in Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Where
you're thinking
about like, how can I destroy my opponent better? And, I don't really think about that, and I don't really like to think about that, and it seems incredibly tedious. Whereas thinking about a puzzle in Fez, which has a single solution and is not this sort of kind of subjective, I think this build 15 is better than that build 20 that you're using for these reasons because I've been mulling it over for the past week.
Well, to me, it is like a puzzle. It's a puzzle of efficiency. It's kind of like in this game on phones called Quell. Have you seen that one?
Mm-mm.
It's basically a sliding blocks puzzle where you slide these droplets of water back and forth and you try to collect the droplets. And you can either beat the levels by just collecting all the droplets without dying, or you can beat it with the minimum possible number of moves.
Mm-hmm.
And the minimum possible number of moves is the most efficient way to beat that level. And it's basically like gold starring it or whatever. And I find that really fun to then have that additional level of puzzle on top of it, thinking of the most efficient way to build it. So just like in an RPG where you have limited points to distribute, thinking about where the best place to put the points, it really doesn't necessarily have anything to do with defeating someone or violence. It's an efficiency puzzle. You know, are these points more useful in strength or constitution? You know, are these points more useful in proximity mine or energy drain or something in Mass Effect, right?
I think what we're arriving at is that if you like, it's basically from what area of the game do you derive the fun of playing it, right? And for you, Mike, and maybe I'm somewhere in the middle, and for you, Josh, the fun comes from
you actually
places.
Are in the middle of us, listeners,
and I am literally
in case you
in
weren't
between.
Sure of the geography of this podcast.
Well, actually, we're a triangle, so no one's really in the middle.
Oh, just like our logo. Wow, how did that work?
Oh, snap. It's Bam. Almost as if I thought of that when I was making it.
Put your hand out, and then he'll be in the middle. Now you're in the middle.
Not really.
What? No, why do we have to put our hand out? Whatever.
He was, okay.
Move on.
Yeah, so it's what, you know, what parts of the game are fun? What makes it fun for you?
Yeah.
And that's one of the cool things about, you know, to turn this into something more positive and less about how much Josh sucks.
I don't know. I'm good with that.
Or how you're all illogical.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing. Like, you're coming at it from a super, like, hyper-rational point of view. I want to derive maximum. It's very German of you, right? And Mike is, like, Italian over here. He's like, I just want to live and drive a Vespa around and enjoy life, right? Like, to use European continental, I think that makes me France. yeah, so, it's something that's cool about games is that the very same game you can derive the same amount of pleasure and enjoyment from, but attack in a completely different way and get something different out of it.
Yeah, once again, I'm not saying that I never do anything that could be construed as max minning, because I'm sitting here thinking about Fallout, creating a character, and then every two levels you get skill points, and you have to think about how to... But
There is some degree of paralysis that comes if you're like super hardcore max minning and you're starting out a long game like Fallout, because you're like, fuck, there are like 40 abilities and I have no idea about any of them, and so I just have to choose something. And if you want to max min, it's like, but what if this is wrong? What if it doesn't go with my ultimate min max build?
And I think that's where I stop and Josh starts or continues. Josh might continue, is that when I get to that point where I'm thinking like, huh, I don't really know how this is going to turn out, I don't then keep thinking about it and solidifying my plan. I just say, ah, fuck it, let's do it. And then I play the game, and I think I often find that like the consternation I might have over my build, as it were, doesn't really affect my game much. Like, it doesn't affect it in some crazy significant way that, oh my god, because I put all my points in this section, this game fucking blows now. I must have made a mistake, you know? Which goes back to our original discussion of Mass Effect, where I said that if a game lets you do that, I feel like it's bad design. Like, it should not be so dependent on where I put my skill points that controls how good of a game it is. It should be a different game, yes, because otherwise they're meaningless.
That's baffling.
But there shouldn't be a way for me
there
to necessarily make
be
a shitty
able
game
to
out
make
of
a
it.
Bad decision.
No, you shouldn't be able to make a decision that hampers the fun of the game so much that you feel like, oh, like much like there's a hyper perfect build, which is what you're constantly looking for. But there's also a build that is total shit and will make you, like, it will ruin the game or something. That doesn't make any sense to me.
That's balance.
Well, you're,
yeah, that's balance. That's a badly balanced game, right? You don't agree with that? You don't agree with
no,
that?
No, I don't agree.
Why don't you agree with that?
Because we're just thinking of opposite examples.
Okay.
Give
me an example of a game that lets you do
you're
that.
You're basically saying that a game should be impossible to be bad at. That no matter what decision you make, like, you know, it's completely balanced and equally good.
I don't think that's what you're saying.
I agree that general abilities or classes and stuff like that should be balanced. But I don't think that, you know, in Skyrim, I don't think you should be able to succeed all the way to the end of the game with no skills except blacksmithing and... You know, armor crafting and, you know, jewelry and bartering or something like that. Do I think you should be able to beat the final dragon in Skyrim or whatever?
Yeah, you
like,
barter
with
him
bartering.
Really well. Totally. You out-negotiate that shit.
You know,
shit.
I was just thinking, like, in Fallout, you can give your character, like, an intelligence level of 1, and they literally can't form English sentences. Like, they speak like a caveman. And I think someone actually tried to play through the game like that, and... Yes, it was much harder. It was a much harder game, but I'm not sure it was impossible to beat the game.
Game experiments like that are sometimes interesting, but that's way too high of a standard to put on game makers to say it's impossible to make a bad decision in your game.
I think what Mike is saying is that with decisions that are all supposed to be, roughly speaking, equal, right? Not every decision must be completely as workable as all other ones, but choosing an initial character class, I shouldn't be able to choose a class that's sucks and like you can't beat the game with. I think that's more along the lines of what you're saying,
because that almost feels like the same kind of design they did for like the old graphic adventure games, like we mentioned before. Like if you didn't pick up the key in the first scene, at the end of the game, you now can't beat it because you didn't pick up that key. Well, like that seems kind of dickish.
So this is really similar. I mean, our discussion is applicable to a bunch of different things. Let's translate
it to
board games for a second. These concepts are applicable in like Dominion or Alien Frontiers and games like that, where you have all these different decisions you could make. And if the game is well designed, they're fairly balanced. You can succeed in Alien Frontiers by using any of the stations a lot, right? Or you can succeed in Dominion by using many different cards in your deck. But the fun part of those games, and the reason they have any strategy at all, and you know what makes them worth basically playing at all for any sort of competitive reason aside from just sitting around a table and shooting the shit, which obviously is
ding,
fun.
Ding, ding, ding,
Charles
ding.
Is motioning yes. towards Charles.
But
towards Josh.
How could you possibly play that game and just choose completely random cards with absolutely no thought into the process?
I don't know. I like, do that just, a lot, and it's still pretty fun.
People play games. This is really interesting, Josh, because I think there are a lot of people who literally don't care if they win, right? Like, you can play a game just to have fun and just to have a social experience and not to win, right?
Yeah, do you ever do that? I mean,
there are, and as a matter of fact, more people do that than do it to win.
So, like I was saying earlier, if it's the first time you're playing, or if it's you're playing briefly for fun, then I understand that you're gonna you don't understand the strategy yet. Probably you don't have a realistic hope of winning, and you're choosing random abilities to see which ones are fun, and you know, look for something unexpected and to learn the game. But if you end up playing it a lot, you know, you're probably gonna be more invested in learning the strategy.
Sure.
So this is what I'm saying. It's like a leveling up situation. When you're playing it casually, I understand. Fun,
yeah,
right? First time you played Dominion.
But once you get good at it, fuck fun.
But once you're
all about
playing
winning.
It a lot, yeah, you would think that what would keep you interested, besides just sitting around a table arbitrarily talking about something and grabbing random cards, you're probably thinking about strategy and decisions you could make that would be better than other decisions.
Yeah, I think we agree.
And if a game has no potential for making any decisions that are better than any other decisions, then that's a pretty... It's a random game. That's dice rolling, and those games are bullshit, right? It's playing quarters is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, okay, but bullshit is basically you're like saying they shouldn't exist, like they have no point of existing.
Yes, I'm saying 100% random games.
Right. And
have no
and
point.
I think that argument is bullshit because once again,
okay,
that's
what
speaking
game
from
do you
the
like that's 100%
it's the
random.
Only point in playing a game is to win, but it's not. So thus games that don't really matter
for example,
and don't strategy,
gambling.
Can still be fun.
What about gambling?
But the thing with gambling is that
people enjoy the fuck out of gambling and it's 100% random.
Do you guys enjoy playing slot machines?
No, I think it's terrible.
Yeah,
but,
I don't enjoy it either.
So but we that, agree.
We agree that gambling is stupid. But what I'm saying is literally. So I'm not like espousing an opinion here. I've been doing like research into
You're
gamification.
Not?
No, I'm like it is the truth. There are more people who play games for communal aspect, enjoyment aspect than play games to win. Like, that is just the makeup of games players.
Okay.
So I think it's totally feasible for people to want to just go play a board game. Like, my family has this board game called Marbles, and it's not, it uses marbles as pieces, but it's not the one where you, like, flick them into a circle, right?
Okay.
It's a board game. And winning's important, like, but the game is totally a social lubricant. It's at least 50%. Of the reason we play the game at family reunions is just to have a reason to sit around the table and bullshit and just get drunk and yell at each other. Like, it has absolutely as much to do about that as it does to do with winning.
I understand that, right? And I agree. It's not like when I play games with you guys, you know, and I lose, I'm irate and I feel like that was a waste of time, right? That's not the case. I'm also not, like, cursing at you.
Mm-hmm.
And
at least not out loud. Yeah.
Well, actually, we do curse at each other, but yeah,
that's part of the fun.
That is true. You are basically cursing at us essentially constantly.
God, fucking Mario Kart. That's all you do.
It's not try forward. Winning is not 100% to me. I'm a bad example of a person to use as that example.
All right. So
none of us is saying that.
None of us is that competitive. But it sounds like you're almost arguing for no strategy at all and no desire to win at all. No desire for competition.
I think we're saying there's a place
for it. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm not arguing for it. I just think it's interesting that it has so little, I just literally don't know if you've ever really even thought about that most people don't think or attack games in the way that you do. Like, they literally don't. Most people go at it for other reasons.
Well, most people are casual players of all games. I'm a casual player of lots of games. Yeah. And I don't approach them from a min-maxing perspective, right? But all of us play games a lot. Yeah. And the games that we like more, we play more. And I would say that each of you would probably be willing to consider yourself, quote, hardcore at some game.
Sure.
Or your favorite games, right? Your hardcore gamers, you know, you've passed that threshold with some games at least, right? And I'm, you know, for the games that I'm hardcore about, it becomes more about winning and more about efficiency and min-maxing.
Some of the most popular games in the world have no win condition.
That must logically apply to you guys too, for the games that you're into more, you know, that you're more competitive about or that you're more interested in performing well. I mean, I can definitely think of examples for you, Charles. I mean, you just talked about your high score in Drop 7 today. Yeah. So if there was, you know, a strategy in Drop 7 that could improve your performance, you'd be interested in hearing it.
Sure, yeah.
If there were a way to min-max
and we
Drop
all play
7
games
to score better, obviously you'd be interested in it. But I can think of fewer examples for Mike. Mike is almost like, I don't give a shit about winning about anything almost. Like, Fallout 3, I feel like you keep replaying just to find the silly shit or something. I don't know. Why do you keep going back to Fallout 3?
Well, I mean, I'll openly admit that I'm not a hardcore competitive gamer, but meaning that, like, I will quickly bow out of a game before I will try to max min it because I find the max minning aspect tedious. Like, I find the thinking and obsessing about how to play a game better, my threshold, I think, is just relatively low. Like, I will think up to a certain point and then I'm like, it's not really worth, I don't care to get that crazy about it. Like, I don't care to get that crazy about builds in Mass Effect 3, or I don't care about, you know, visiting necessarily every, even in Fallout 3, even in my favorite game, or one of my favorite games, I haven't necessarily visited every place in that game. Like, there's like 200 locations.
Well, it's infeasible,
right? No, it's not infeasible.
I visited every location in Fallout 3.
But I'm just saying,
every major location,
everywhere
briefly
on the map. Everywhere on the map.
You didn't explore every nook and cranny of every location.
Right. I went to every location on the map.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I could play through a game and beat it and be happy and not have gone to every location. Like, I didn't go to every planet in Mass Effect, for God's sake. I mean,
well, there's no reason to.
Well, I mean, hey, if I really cared about the world, you know, not necessarily max minning, you know, I could read about the history of every planet in Mass Effect 3 and every entry in the Codex, you know, but I didn't because I'm not that into that game and yeah. I'm not sure many people would. But I had just to pull away from games for a second, I had an interesting example of max minning that is not a video game that I'm curious about your thoughts.
Couponing.
Couponing. I was also thinking of hybrids. There is quite an active max minning community in hybrids where people try to
hypermile
max minning your mileage because, I mean, A, maybe they want to save money or they want to save the environment, or they're just really hyper obsessive about getting the most performance out of their car. Now, I'm not into that. I mean, I know Robin isn't. My wife has a hybrid, but she's not into that. She might have been into it, you know, very shortly when she got it because it was a cool thing to do with your car. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that she is, like, you know, losing sleep over, like, how can I get more mileage out of my car? But some people really, really give a shit about getting that extra half mile per gallon, which
it's way more than a half mile per gallon, though.
It's not directly correlated with hybrids. I mean, you can get over 100 miles per gallon.
Okay, in any car,
in a Geo Metro.
I just remember it coming up in a hybrid article that I read a few years ago. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I mean, so would you guys, do you care about, like, something like that?
I think that's an interesting pursuit. I think those, you know, that.
Yeah, it's totally cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool to hear about.
Right, it's cool to hear about, but would you? Do you think you ever would get that obsessive about your car?
Well, the sacrifice you have to make is minimal acceleration. You have to not go up hills. You have to not drive very fast. You have to drive at what might be considered
an kind of tedious
unsafe speed to be obsessive about that.
Right.
I mean the sacrifices you have to make are real and dramatic.
Right. They're significant.
Right. In a game like Dominion. Right, the sacrifice you make is not choosing the bad card. You choose the card that works better for the strategy in your hand.
So
your
I think
deck.
We've conflated trying to do better with max minning. I don't think those are the same thing.
Okay,
well, like, you're just saying like any time that you try to do better in any aspect, that's min maxing. I'm saying min maxing is, I mean, maybe it's a spectrum.
I think it's a threshold. Yeah, it's a threshold.
Well, okay, so whatever we want to call it, there's a spectrum, and like on one side is, I just want to try and do a little bit better than the last time I played, and the other end of the spectrum is like, I'm going to neglect like 60% of the game because I'm only playing this one thing because I want to do that to the very best of my extremes. And I actually don't even think it's wrong necessarily to do that if that's where you derive the enjoyment from playing the game.
It's not wrong.
It's just an interesting
It's just something that I difference. Know I'm not as interested in doing and I find kind of tedious. Like, cool. I enjoy playing the game as is. I don't really necessarily want to get out a spreadsheet and think about the best way to play it, because that seems pretty tedious to me. That's not a game. That's a spreadsheet.
That's cool. I mean, it's to each his own. To me, it's a puzzle.
We're all friends here at the Escort Mission.
It's another level of
I love you guys.
Strategy or puzzle solving.
Notice how Josh didn't say anything.
No, he didn't.
I see how
say anything about what?
He
about
wasn't even
loving
listening.
Mike.
I was listening.
Or
I was
Charles,
talking.
Or anybody.
While you were talking.
Yeah, talking over the love. All right, so can we... I think we can...
Well, yeah, what time...
So we're just about to eclipse the 90-minute mark.
Let's go to Best Game Ever.
Ooh. All right.
Best Game Ever.
Who's got that?
Who wants to do a Best Game Ever?
I got that.
It's not the best, it's a best. Right?
I have a Best Game Ever, and my nomination this week for Best Game Ever is... Tetris.
Lame.
Really?
Super awesome.
Totally lame.
Do, 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 do. Okay.
You Russian commie.
Tetris is goddamn great. It is really, really terrific. I love puzzle games. I'm definitely a puzzle game freak. Actually, I'm not a super freak. I don't play like every puzzle
super
game that
freak.
Comes out.
Super freak.
I really love Lumines. I really love Tetris.
You really love Bejeweled?
No, I don't.
Drop
I think
seven.
Match 3 is bullshit and for people who suck,
you're super
actually.
Crazy
okay,
about
but I will.
Match 3 is lame.
Puzzle Fighter.
Yeah, no, Puzzle Quest is the only Bejeweled I will play when there are RPG elements.
Did you play Puzzle Quest?
No.
Oh, man. Puzzle Quest is sweet.
Missing out.
Well, I have Tetris. Honest to God, I feel like...
Well, why do you play
I
Lumines
kind of
then?
Don't
just play Tetris.
Lumines has a really awesome music and
yeah,
the music...
Yeah, so how is Tetris better than...
So just play Lumines music while you're playing Tetris.
No, because the Lumines, the music is an integral part of the gameplay.
So you only like the Lumines music in context.
I think it's enough different... And I just enjoy it. I like it. I mean, Lumines is good. I also play that. But no, Tetris, if I had to choose one, and actually, you think about, like, what would be your desert island game? Like, if you could only take one thing with you to be stranded with, it's Tetris. Because I could always play Tetris forever. Like, it just never gets old. It's one of those games, like one of the super fundamental, like, games with a capital G, like chess and Go and these, like crazy depths of strategy. There's really no optimal way to play. It's just so fascinating.
What does it even mean to be optimal at it, though?
That's what I'm saying. There isn't an optimal way
to
play.
But what do you mean by an optimal way to play?
Well, you can try to play to maximize score. You could try to play to maximize lines. Like, those are two different ways to play, right? You could try to play to maximize Tetrises, right?
Okay.
Like, I just want to get back-to-back-to-back Tetrises and nothing else, right? You could try to play to get to the highest levels, right?
You know, you could try to play to build the highest tower.
Actually, this is really
without
fascinating.
Without dying, you mean? Ooh, that's
so.
That's cool.
This is to jump off the Best Game Ever. Speaking of Drop 7, I let Charlie, who's my son, my two-year-old, play Drop 7 a lot because it teaches him numbers and relationships between numbers, and it's got kind of fun music.
Is he old enough to actually understand?
He doesn't understand. I mean, what he understands is he sees the numbers and he sees the little balls and he talks about the colors of the balls and the numbers and like, oh, a gray ball and crack it and all these kind of mechanics. And he plays it so differently because I'm like trying to do one thing. It's kind of like Max Minning. Like, I'm just trying to get a score, and he has so much other enjoyment. And like, when he plays and gets all the bubbles up to the top, it's almost like he's doing the exact opposite thing, right? Because he likes to get a big tall tower of balls, and then it ends, and it like plays a little music sting, and he goes, "Yay!" and claps, right?
That's brilliant.
I'm like, no, you lost, but like, wait
you
a minute.
Loser.
I were losing the whole time. Like, each one of those was a tiny
he's
win.
So bad.
Each one of those was a tiny win that I didn't realize I was achieving, right? Like, I thought, you know, I had that revelation the other day watching him play it. Anyway, so that's interesting. Tetris is super awesome. It's like a crazy simple mechanic.
Let's talk about which Tetris you're talking about.
Okay,
first.
So...
Yeah. What are you thinking of in your head right now?
What do you mean by Tetris?
Choosing specifically my Tetris, if I had to choose one to take on the desert island, it's the TI-82 Z-Shell Tetris.
What?
I think an equally acceptable form of Tetris would be Game Boy Tetris, right? Like, I'd put that in the same... Just, like, the basic Tetris is my favorite, the one with no power-ups. I do like the version that has the hold mechanic where you can hold a block. That does make it into a dramatically different game. I think all the later forms of Tetris are, you know, kind of weirder. You know, you introduce all the different power-ups and that kind of stuff is a little bit weird. But what I love about Tetris is that it takes this crazy simple mechanic, this very, very simple concept, and it's so extensible and so deep, right? It makes for an incredibly engrossing and engaging single-player game. It makes for an equally engrossing and engaging multiplayer game, right? It's just so pure, and you can go to this totally zen place. It's almost meditative, right? It's like the kind of activities that people do in order to meditate, where literally you say the om syllable to give your brain something to do, like your higher order consciousness something to do while the rest of you expands out into the universe. Like, Tetris is like that for me.
God damn, that's right? Deep, man.
It's wow. Just something to do to cycle, and then the rest of you can just think about anything else, and like, I'll solve problems while playing Tetris. I don't know. It's so good. Tetris is so good. Why does Tetris suck?
All right, well, apparently we all agree. So thanks for... I just say my piece real quick?
Go ahead.
It's short. Yeah, Tetris is good. Tetris is a good game. Not sure if it would be my desert island game. Never really thought about what a desert island game would be for me, but it's pretty pure.
It's a good question. Maybe we can do that as a topic sometime.
I would agree that it's one of you know, it's a game with the simple rules that, you know, it's hard to really like corrupt Tetris. Well, they've tried, obviously, but it's good. I definitely don't play Tetris as much as you. I think I probably had my heyday when the Game Boy one came out, cuz I probably played the most Tetris there. And I don't really habitually play Tetris, but I do like meditative games that you can kind of lose yourself in and not think. I know I did used to play DDR, or the open source version, on my computer using the arrow keys. I would play DDR using the arrow keys.
Stepmania.
Yeah, right.
That's good.
In a very similar way,
yeah.
and you know, and that also has like
I used like. Keys in the middle of the keyboard,
yeah,
not the arrow keys,
but it's a very like, at some point I got good enough where I didn't really I'm not even seeing the arrows anymore. You're not really seeing the blocks. You're thinking before you are,
yeah.
You're doing before you even are realizing you're conscious of it. And so I don't have a problem with Tetris. I probably don't love it as much as you. I don't think I'd be as effusive.
I don't think very many people love it as much as I
but
do.
It's one of gaming's greatest games. Yes, I agree.
Thoughts, Josh?
I'd like to briefly point out that your favorite version of Tetris is actually like an illegal, pirated, copyright infringing version.
It's not the one I played the most. I actually play the official EA iPhone Tetris at this point. But yeah, it totally. That was my. Because it's so simple and basic and like
have
pure.
To play it once,
I think that's
to be
pretty
illegal.
Funny.
Yeah.
And interesting because, you know, it brings up this question of. Is it possible to improve that game, right?
Yeah.
Like, would it be improved by adding one more shape?
There are no other shapes.
What do you mean there are no other shapes? Like,
can't make another shape out of four blocks.
They're all made out of four blocks.
I never even realized they were all
Boom.
Four blocks.
Roasted.
So it is...
When you're playing, you're trying to make 10... Every 10 blocks, you should be getting a Tetris.
Because
every 40 blocks, you should be getting a Tetris.
I'm not this much of an expert at Tetris.
Yeah. Cause
so they all fit together perfectly every 10 blocks.
It is No, it's not deterministic. So Lumines, interestingly, is deterministic. There is no combination of blocks that you get that you can't totally wipe out. If you play optimally, Tetris, you can't, you can get combinations. Like if you just get nothing but the left S and the right S, you can, you will always have spaces, right?
Right.
So Tetris is not deterministic in that respect. I think that actually makes it a better game, because that just ups the level of skill required to kind of achieve mastery. But I forgot where I started. Where'd I start? Oh, can you improve it?
I was asking about adding blocks or ways you can improve it.
There are no other possible combinations.
Because aren't the pieces technically called like tetraminos?
They are, yeah.
And the tetra prefix
tetra means four.
Means four, yeah. So you couldn't add one with five blocks because that would fuck up the
that
whole thing.
That would be a penta. That'd be Pentris.
I never even realized
make
that.
Make Pentris. I was thinking of Pentris would be better than Tetris, apparently. Pieces.
No, so, they're all four blocks, yeah.
So so there's no way that the base mechanic you think could be improved, but the
they have added stuff
features
to Tetris
and
that
interactions
I have liked.
Between, you know, multiple players or seeing how many pieces are coming up or the randomization of which pieces. What about the width? Does the width of
the width
play
is
field,
10, it's 10 blocks
is
wide.
That key to the experience? What if yeah. it weren't? What if it
that
were 12?
Would be interesting. That'd be interesting. It would change the game.
Have
a
any
lot.
Of the sequels ever changed that?
There is one. None of the official Tetris sequels, as far as I'm aware. There are games that are like that. There's a multiplayer Tetris. I don't know if you've seen it online, but it's like 50,000. It's called a Tetris MMO. It's like 50,000 blocks wide, and there are people. When you play it, you see this like line across the top of the screen that's like super compressed version of. Like the Tetris board that's like all 50,000, and you're seeing one board that you're playing, and you're assigned to this one board, and you're working with like all these other people to try and make lines. And it's like a huge deal when anybody makes a line. Like if the whole team is able to make one row, it's like, oh my God, we did it.
So is it really easy to troll people in there?
Oh yeah, you can just, there are definitely people who are like trying to fuck it over all the time, right? Yeah. So that's interesting. And you know, they're kind of fun ways to play it. The things that they've added that I think have been good additions are the hold block, where you can hold a piece and call it in, and the multiplayer, which was never there in the original. Both of those are interesting additions. Beyond that, the power-ups, I don't know, they're kind of goofy. They work well in multiplayer, like I'm going to speed my opponent's lines up when they're coming down and that kind of stuff. It's fun, but it's not like...
It's flexible.
What, yeah. flexible what about your iPhone choosing where to put the block feature?
That is an interesting one. It's almost... So if people don't know what this is, the first Tetris for iPhone, which I actually bought for $10 from fucking EA,
Jesus.
Back when they did not know how to price... Or back when...
It hadn't gone to the bottom yet.
It was when the App Store first came out, and you know companies were thinking like, you can charge $10, like... You know, that's half of what a DS game costs. So
well,
you can
Square
totally
Enix
that.
Still does like 15 yeah. and 16, so.
So, well, it's kind of come back, right? At that point, it was like there were expensive games, and then everything was like a dollar or free. And now it's kind of coming back. We're like, no, this is really high quality, actually. Like, you can now really see the difference. And, you know, Infinity Blade, okay, it's $6, right? Because it's really good and it's really worth it. So the first version of Tetris that came out for the iPhone... you had to like swipe. It was using the same mechanic of, okay, I move the piece to the left or the right. I rotate it the number of times I want to, and then I drop it.
Right.
Right. And that really didn't work that well. And,
without
you
buttons.
Know, without buttons, you couldn't make it work. And so what they did is they invented this version of the game that, as Josh said, when he played it, is almost a different game. It's almost not Tetris because that core mechanic is so different. But basically it just gives you... It gives you options across the screen. It shows a little ghost of your piece across the screen, across the bottom of where you want to place your piece and drop it down. When you just click, you either hit one of those four options or you hit none of them, and then you get a different set of four until you see the one you want, and then you hit it, and your piece automatically goes there, which makes it playable on one hand. It makes it playable in the kind of touchscreen interface, and it's actually... really good and fun, and it's challenging in the same way. It involves the same... It's kind of like... It makes the game seem very trivial for a novice player who doesn't play that often. But for somebody who plays at a high level, the activity is almost the same. Because when you're playing at the... level, I don't mean to like humble brag it, but at the level that I do, where I see, you know, my coming four pieces and like I'm planning exactly where all four of them are going to go while I'm placing the piece that's on the screen. Like I'm not even thinking of the piece that's on the screen. I'm thinking about the next four. If you're playing at that level, the activity is basically the same because the button presses to get the piece where you want to go kind of fade into the background. And that, when you're playing single player, they don't become important until the game gets really fast. And that version can get really fast in the same way. And you'll like, I don't have enough time to tap to the version, the place location I want, and then hit it before it runs out and it just drops it. So it's kind of, at the high levels, it's a very similar game. At the low levels, it's very different. So it's good. I like it. And it's I think it's only 99 cents.
So how is Tetris better than Match 3, Bejeweled? Like, what's your problem with Bejeweled?
I have no real problem with Bejeweled. I just don't like it. It's just fun to say that those people are assholes.
but why don't you like Match 3? I mean, have you ever tried Puzzle Quest?
No, I haven't tried Puzzle Quest specifically. Isn't Puzzle Fighter a Match 3?
I think so, yeah. I have not played that. But Puzzle Quest is sort of like the RPG version. It's just every battle is a match three battle. Right. But it's more fun because it's not the kind of the mindless just match three of anything to make them disappear. There's strategy in like, I want to do an attack, or I want to get a specific resource so that I can do a specific spell, or mm-hmm. I want to get gold. You know, that there's...
That's the kind of bullshit you have to add on to match three to make it fun.
So basically you don't like any kind of pattern matching game?
No, I'm not saying that. I just... I don't know. Maybe it's something about the blocks falling. It's just what I appreciate more. I've just never liked Match 3. Like, what's the one? I've got one that I'm playing.
Falling blocks. That's your thing.
No.
So you're a Connect Four person, huh? Like those falling things?
drop
them. Or am I going to drop them?
There's a
I'm not
game
a big fan of Connect Four, by the way.
Playing a game called Shapeshift.
I love Connect Four.
I'm not a big fan of that. I don't know.
Connect Four is pretty good. It's basically like, I mean, it's tic-tac-toe, right?
Yeah, which is another one of those games that, yeah, is timeless, but, I mean, how often do you really play tic-tac-toe?
Yeah.
It's not that
much
fun.
Well, tic-tac-toe is done. It's, like, too simple. The math isn't
the complex. The 3D enough. Tic-tac-toe is good.
So, yeah, either 3D or Connect 4 has enough mathematical possibilities to make it a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Just not sure it's, yeah, I don't know. It that seems like a game where... If the other person, like, I don't know, I feel like if the other person makes, much like in tic-tac-toe, like just the right move, like they're basically ahead and there's really no real way to switch who's winning. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, Match 4,
I've never played high level Connect 4 with other high level people.
4, we should play some Connect 4.
But I feel like it's a very small solution set.
We should also play some
set.
3D tic-tac-toe. Yeah. That's a game that benefits extremely from being played in a physical world. If you just like lay out, so there's
that's true.
There was a game.
It's hard to draw on paper.
Well, you can draw like four boards. So the version I like.
It's harder to visualize when 3D, you draw it on paper.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's 2D.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can play and it's functionally 2D. The same, but. you know, I actually had, my dad had this set, which was, it was four, it was instead of tic-tac-toe, which is 3x3, is a 4x4 grid and four layers. And it was, you played with like poker chips and you put it on and, that's surprisingly fun. It's really fun. You can play that game for a long time.
Yeah, we should play that. Yeah. So, anyway,
Tetris.
My point with bringing up Match 3 compared to Tetris is that I think it's pretty funny that your basic response was just, you don't like it.
Yeah.
You do like Tetris.
Yeah.
So the way that any of these particular, you know, puzzle games of dropping blocks or whatever elevates above the others is really just personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do appreciate the age and the concept of the four now that I just learned that in Tetris. You know, and its inability to almost be improved. I think that's pretty telling since the very first version of Tetris, you know, all the versions that have come since, as you say, not many of them have made many improvements. So it is kind of like this, this old style board game even,
yeah.
Although it couldn't really be done with pieces physically.
No,
not very easily.
It had to be a video game.
So it really had to be a video game, but it really is almost like the most board game, like video game.
It has the same qualities.
You can think of it. It has this very limited set of possibilities that is hard to add features or something that are actually going to improve it without kind of breaking it. So I appreciate it's almost perfectness in that sense, but it's never clicked with me the way it has you. But I understand, you know, how much of an effect it's had on you. So I'll let it be nominated, but
word.
I wouldn't choose it.
Yeah, you mentioned chess. I'm also thinking like Pac-Man are like these games that, for the most part, can't be improved on. And even if they're not your thing, even if you don't really get into it,
but
like
didn't
you
we
Tetris,
just talk about how Pac-Man was improved and everybody was shocked by how it happened?
You mean like the
Championship DX or whatever?
Well, yeah, I mean it was improved, but I don't think I'm not sure that the original is necessarily invalidated. Like I don't think it invalidated Pac-Man in the arcade. Like. Mm-hmm. I don't think that game should now be eradicated and no one should play that anymore.
Oh, I definitely don't think that. And I actually think that when that game came out, it was sort of like this version for the iPhone of Tetris, where it's almost fundamentally a different game. It's like a different game being played on the same board with the same pieces.
Yeah, it really is. Right?
Yeah, it's almost like rhythmic Pac-Man.
Yeah, it's
where
very
you're,
different.
Where you're, yeah, the fact that you're trying to find the correct path and you're almost like on a beat. Like, whereas I don't play normal Pac-Man like I would DDR, you know, like thinking like, okay, I got to stick with this rhythmic pattern of where I'm going. And if I get off my pattern, then I'm going to die. I mean, I guess hardcore people, you know, the people who get the high score in Pac-Man, they do play it that way. It's an algorithm that you're following. You're not just kind of like, well, I guess I'm going to go this way because that'll go away from the ghost. No, they're like, no, you got to stick to this plan. Otherwise you'll never get to the kill screen.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about, so you mentioned, you know, liking Tetris coming down to, or liking one puzzle game over another coming down to your personal preference. And ultimately, that may well be right. I literally just haven't played enough Kinect, or enough Match 3, rather, to be able to name things that I like worse about it. It just hasn't clicked with me. And maybe that's something that I can do is really try to play a bunch of matches. Fuck, maybe I'll just end up loving that too. As
well,
much
there's
as
also
I do
a bunch
else.
Of other examples in the genre, sure. You know, like Luminous or whatever. Yeah. But like this one I just showed you today by Radiant Games. Mm-hmm. As I was mentioning last week, they make a bunch of games in the same engine that looks like Geometry Wars. But they made one that looks like Tetris, where you just slide pieces left and right instead of dropping shapes.
Yeah,
and the pieces look. I think they're all...
They're two different colors, so...
Are they all one-dimensional?
They're
either one piece or two pieces wide or three pieces wide or four pieces wide. Horizontal lines.
Yeah, I had to watch that game for like 15 seconds before I knew I wanted to play a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right? Josh showed me this video and like 10 minutes or 10 seconds in, I was like, yeah, it's a good game. I want to play that game right now. I'm kind of mad this is a video and not a demo.
Yeah, we have to report
Oh, wait, you said it wasn't a demo? You said you wanted to play the demo?
I wanted to play it that badly to lower myself to the point of playing a demo.
Wow, to the level of a demo. That's
but
sickening.
It's basically free. I mean, you name your price.
Yeah,
it's
I got to go
Indie
get it.
Royale,
I definitely should go get it.
So do we
so,
we put it in there? We put it in there?
Sure, whatever, man.
Yay.
Sweet.
All right, Tetris is pretty. Whatever, I don't care. Whatever you want.
I appreciate it. It's a good game.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
All right, host.
All right.
Host.
That's the Escort Mission.
That, right there.
That was that. That's what that was that you heard that or you happened. Didn't hear.
Zip, you're not zam, thanks right for now. Not hearing it.
So, reminder, social networks.
Oh, social networks, right. So we're on all the popular ones, at Escort Mission on Twitter. Facebook, just search for the Escort Mission. I don't know. It's a long, annoying URL. Google Plus, oh God, it's even worse. It's like a 16-digit random alphanumeric code or
oh
something.
Oh no, it's not like slash the Escort Mission?
They don't do that.
Not even like...
Can't you request that?
No, even normal companies that are big and important.
What about users?
No, not even users. Everybody is a random 16-digit alphanumeric code.
Really?
It's ridiculous. Anyway.
Well, that's only a recent addition to Facebook. Right, there was that big land grab to get like a Facebook name.
By recent, you mean like a couple of years ago?
That was like a year ago. Yeah.
So on Facebook, you can get like slash username. Except when I've tried to do the Escort Mission,
you can now.
It's taken. I don't know who took it, but I can't get our name. So it's just like pages slash something slash the hyphen Escort hyphen Mission or something like that.
It's all on the website.
Anyway, go to theescortmission.com. All the links are there.
Another thing you can do when you go to theescortmission.com is
get a dry martini.
You could buy a martini shaker on Amazon.
Ooh, yes, you could.
To make your dry martini.
The code is there.
And give us a little cash on the way. If you do that, it doesn't cost you anything more, whatever you're going to buy on Amazon. If you just click through our website, then it's a cool way to support the show. We're not going to ask for you to literally donate money straight to us, but if you're going to buy something on Amazon, go do it there and help us out.
Let me emphasize that we are not asking for money.
Yeah,
right?
We're not. Literally,
we don't accept money.
Well, I mean,
if you have money,
I don't think we'll turn it down, but yeah. We're not officially panhandling.
So all you do is click on our Amazon link.
Yep. You go to theescortmission.com, click the Amazon banner.
And then you buy anything you were already going to buy from Amazon.
For exactly what you would have paid otherwise.
For no increase in pay.
And we get like a shiny nickel or something.
And we get like a fraction of a cent or something.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Do that.
Good job, Charles.
Please do.
All right. Thanks, folks, for joining us.
All right. Thanks for hosting, Josh.
You just got escorted.
Escort.
Escort mission.